Today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. We're talking NBA draft. What's plan A, plan B, plan C for the Boston Celtics? We're going to talk about it with Chris Grenham right now on a Thursday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. It's like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Hi there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Thank you for making this show part of your daily routine. It's a Monday through Friday podcast, and I want to thank everybody for downloading, sharing, subscribing. If you're new, welcome aboard. If this is your first episode, hope you like it enough to subscribe. A reminder, tomorrow, the Friday show, is going to be a mailbag show, and I'm combining the questions that you have for me, that you're emailing to jcorrales@masslive.com. Email me, jcorrales@masslive.com. That's K-A-R-A-L-I-S, jcorrales@masslive.com. I will combine those questions. Some will be answered on Mass Live. Some will be answered on the podcast. So be sure to send me your questions. Today on the show, talking to Chris Grenham of Forbes, who is a very avid draft watcher, one of the best out there as far as analyzing the draft. Who might the Celtics target? Who's going to go kind of where? He's got a really, really good grasp on the draft. We'll talk about plan A, which is moving up, plan B, which is staying put, plan C, which is trading out. A little bit of each conversation. So here's my conversation with Chris Grenham. All right, Chris. You're one of the draft experts that I know, although working with Tom Westerholm at Mass Live, I'm obligated to mention Onyeka Okongwu probably 20 times in this podcast. So
you're not going to get an Onyeka break having me on. I'm right with
you. Right with
that. Yeah. So if you're looking for a break, you brought on the wrong.
No. It's okay. Good. Yeah. I've listened to you and Tom together on his podcast, and I do have a sense of that, but yeah, it's just kind of funny that that's the guy that you guys have latched on to.
In fairness, Tom, I remember being at the Auerbach Center at a practice early this season and waiting to go into the gym. It was, you know, they bring us to the bottom of the stairs, and I'm standing next to Tom, and Tom's looking at me, and he's, you know, everyone's bored just standing down there. He's like, I think Onyeka can go number one. I'm like, Tom, it's October. Like, relax, man. Like, come on. So he has been on that trade for some time, but he's a great player. And if the Celtics had any opportunity, say that he's the guy who starts to slide towards the back of the top 10 and they can use some of those assets to move up, he'd be the guy I would target if I'm them.
Yeah. So let's table this for a second here. So we have this episode is very draft kind of, the possibilities, because the Celtics kind of have the ability to do anything in this draft. They could attach their picks to a player and make a run for a top guy. And I don't know that this particular draft has anybody that's married to a particular pick. So the Celtics can trade all the way up, potentially. I mean, I don't know number one, but they could make a run. They could trade into the middle of the lottery. They could stay put. They could trade out of the first round altogether. There's so many possibilities here for the Celtics. So let's just start with the broader big picture. What do you think is the best course of action? What do you think, like, if you're going through those possibilities, just kind of looking at the Celtics situation, kind of maybe try putting those in order a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. They have a multitude of options entering draft night. And I don't want to be the I don't like being the trade up guy. You don't want to be the trade up guy. You know, come on, move up, because that's inherently risky, moving up in any draft, especially when you're packaging assets. But the Celtics are in a pretty unique situation where they have a lot of picks. They don't have a lot of roster space, so they can't really use all four realistically. They've got 14, 26, and 30 in the first round. So if I'm the Celtics, I do think you need to explore packaging a couple of those first round picks, maybe even a player, and moving up into the top 10. I'm not saying go grab the number one pick and go, you know, take James Wiseman or something like that. I'm saying you could target someone like a Killian Hayes or an Onyeka Okongwu if he falls back to the back end of the top 10. I think that would be wise because, again, say they do want to hoard these three picks and they want to keep them all, like, you're in an interesting spot. You're probably looking for at least one, maybe even two, if you keep them all draft and stash guys, which there's not a whole lot of options in that class. But Danny Ainge did kind of hint at that during his exit interview, saying, you know, they could look at a guy like that who they can stash away, whether it be, you know, long-term in the G League or whatever. That's an option. They have project options because of the roster crunch, but I just don't see them being able to use all three of those first rounders and the second rounder effectively. So I think you need to look at packaging a couple of those first round picks to move up into the, you know, mid lottery, I would say. If some of those guys like a Killian Hayes, like an Onyeka Okongwu, start to, you know, fall toward the back end of the lottery. Because again, this is a weird draft where you're not getting all the pre-draft research you normally have. And it wasn't a very highly sought after draft to begin with. So the range that these guys have is so great that we don't really know, like, everyone's mock drafts are going to be thrown out the second the draft begins because it's not going to be as accurate as it normally is. We don't have as much info. So I think there's a multitude of ways they could go, but I think packaging those picks, maybe a player, to move up and grab someone that the Celtics have targeted is a wise move.
Yeah, it feels like this is the year where what you said at the start of this, where I'm not normally a trade-up guy. Yeah. I think the not normally trade-up guys are saying, trade up, you know, if you can do it. It seems like the consensus, and it makes sense to me, is to take 14 and 26 and see if what that can get you and who you need to attach to get as high as you need to. And I'll reference this. I've mentioned this once on a previous podcast, but I'll mention Ryan Bernardoni at Danger Cart on Twitter wrote a great series of kind of pieces previewing the offseason. He's just got such a great grasp on the CBA and and the draft and the value of draft picks, where I really like what he said, which was basically your second rounder can be a two-way player. You're basically looking to maybe upgrade Tremont. I think that's a widespread belief that the Celtics might upgrade Tremont Waters. And two of those first round picks get packaged to move up somehow, and 30 you kind of have in your back pocket in case Enes Kanter opts in and you need to sell him with a draft pick to move him, you know. And he brings up Portland, and I think it's funny to mention that he goes back to Portland, but it's a move that I think the Blazers actually makes sense because they could probably use him. They've used him effectively before, and they need players that are cheap. And whoever they get at 30, they might be able to find somebody useful off the bench that doesn't cost too much because they're a super expensive team. So that seems to be the general consensus. So now, with that in mind, if that's plan A, how far up can they realistically go? Knowing that obviously if they want to package Marcus Smart with two picks, they can get up really high, but that's not really realistic. How far could they go? Like, we talk about Onyeka Okongwu. I assume that would mean they're giving up on somebody like Robert Williams. So can they package 14 and 26 in Robert Williams? How high does that get them? The conversation with Chris continues in just a minute, but first, rockauto.com has everything you need for your car, whether it's a very complicated part that you're going to use to fix your broken down car, or if it's a very simple part that you're going to use to maybe get both of your headlights working, or to get new windshield wipers so you can see after all this rain that we just got. rockauto.com is fair pricing, the same price for everybody, professional mechanics, do-it-yourselfers. It's a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. So skip the trip down to the chain store at the strip mall, because that person at the counter is going to do the same thing that you can do at home with rockauto.com. Take all of that same information that you have, put it into a website, and then come up with a part. This way, if you go through rockauto.com, you can ensure that you're getting the best price and not just whatever they decide to give you, because that's the brand that they carry. That catalog on rockauto.com is unique, easy to navigate. So go check it out right now. See all the parts that are available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. That is extraordinarily important for us, because they won't know that it's coming from us otherwise. So write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box on rockauto.com. It's an amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify.
I mean, I think that would get them higher than a lot of the other packages that are being thrown out there. Say you're throwing in like a Romeo Langford or someone like that. I think Robert Williams might get them a little higher up. But again, it all depends on, like I said before, this draft isn't a very, no one's really raving about this draft class, to put it politely.
Right.
So the question in my mind then, yeah, it kind of sucks. So I really am excited about next year's draft. But it brings into question, how are other teams going to value these picks? You know, are two first rounders that valuable to a team like the Hawks at 6 or a team like the Pistons at 7 as they would be next year? You know, I think two first rounders next year, totally different story than two first rounders this year. So I think that could easily come into play. And I think it also depends on who you're working with. You know, a team like the Hawks might be interested in someone like Robert Williams, get another rim runner in there. I don't really know, but I think it could get them outside of the top five. I don't think it'll get them into the top five, because again, I don't see teams in 1 through 5 in those slots really valuing two first rounders as much as they would in a normal draft year. And I think that really could come into play. But a guy like Okongwu, or like I mentioned before, Killian Hayes, there's plenty of guys who could fall into that 5 through 10 range. And I think it's totally possible that the Celtics could, you know, jump up with a package in that range.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the most interesting part of that is, I mean, first of all, you got to find a guy, you got to find a team that is going to value those two picks. Obviously that's going to value Robert Williams or whomever you trade, but I guess let me backtrack. Why is this? What makes a bad draft? Because every bad draft has good players. We're not going to get 60 players out of this that suck.
Right.
There are going to be surprises. There's going to be somebody, maybe who knows which of the top five players is going to be a bust, but somewhere in this draft is going to be a surprise. Somewhere in this draft is going to be a player that makes all of the teams before him look stupid. So, but let me, what makes this such a bad draft?
I think it's a combination of a lack of like high-end star power at the top, where there are good players. Anthony Edwards is great. LaMelo Ball is great. Their ceilings are very high. But I think the star power is a little smaller than normal. Once you get into the back half of the top 10, you're already dealing with guys who their ceilings are probably a really good role player. Normally in a top 10, that's not really the case. There are good role players deep down into this draft, some that you could find in the second round, but the depth is really an issue because they're few and far between. in my opinion, in this class. So there are guys like a Killian Hayes at Gonzaga who is probably a first rounder without his injury history, but his injury history pushes him way down into the second round or early in the second round, who really knows. And so like, there's a lot of stories like that where guys don't have as much sure. value as they normally would. And so I think it's a combination of the star power at the top doesn't really pop like it normally does in a big draft class. And the depth really isn't what people are looking for. But I do think that there has been a lot of like unwarranted bashing of this draft class, because there are good role players deep into this first round and guys that the Celtics could really use with those last two first round picks if they end up keeping them. So I don't think it's as bad as everyone says, but I think it's the depth and the lack of star power would be my answer.
Right. So I feel like just hearing all of that, it does make it kind of primed for a trade up situation where a team, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, does Chicago, Atlanta, do those teams with a lot of young players already want another guy that's going to demand the money that a top whatever six or five or four or whatever slot right. Do they want another one of those guys, or does trading down make sense for them because you know you're getting, as they always say, a couple of bites at the apple? Maybe you find a stud somewhere down there. Maybe you'll, you know, look like a genius and be like, wow, we traded down and got this guy. Well, amazing. But also, maybe you just find a couple of decent role players off the bench that help fill out your roster, that once the top guys that you have that are young start signing their extensions, you're going to need like some cheap talent somewhere to fill out right. the roster. So it does feel like we're in a situation where jumping from 14 to somewhere, like you said, between 5 and 10, that's not outrageous. I mean, the 14th pick, you're only jumping up four spots, maybe eight spots. So right,
it's nothing major.
It's yeah. not right. It's not like you're going from 26 up to one. You know, like, yeah. So
yeah,
I think jumping up, if one of these players slides, then I can see a situation where Ainge says, yeah, let's pull the trigger, because it does consolidate the picks. It does get them totally. A guy. So even if you're theoretically overpaying him because he's making too much for his talent level, but so what? I mean, you're the right. Celtics.
Right. And I totally agree. Like a team like the Hawks, do they really want to grab another top 10 pick, have to pay him down the line? Like,
yeah.
Like I was saying before, there are good role guys deeper into this first round. So say they can grab 14 and 26 from the Celtics, and they can get a guy like Desmond Bane or anyone really that they're not going to have to pay as much down the road. And like you said, serves that role player type position that they really need. If I'm the Hawks, I think that's an appealing option. Again, wouldn't consider myself an Atlanta Hawks expert. I'm just using them as an example here, but I totally agree with you. I think that's an appealing option.
So, all right. So plan A, let's say, is trade up. So you've identified Onyeka Okongwu as a guy that, and Tom has mentioned that, and now I'm just going to start saying it and repeating what you, there's two types of, there's smart people and the people who repeat smart people. When it comes right. to the draft, I'm a repeat smart people kind of guy. So even if I'm wrong, I kind of slide into the consensus of being wrong. So, but I admit, I always say up front, like, I'm really not paying attention. Like, especially you and Tom, like, people really need to understand that in normal times when we're all standing there waiting for the Celtics to call us down, let me paint the picture for you. We're at the Auerbach Center. The media section is like way up high, and we've got to walk down a flight of stairs to go down to the court. And we just sit there and wait for them to call us down. And we get there early in case there's, you know, a surprise or anything like that. So there's a lot of sitting around. There's a lot of just kind of hanging out. And like, you and Tom will start talking about, I mean, it feels like sometimes you're talking about like high school freshmen, for God's sake.
It's probably been the case on more than one occasion.
Yeah. Like, you guys really dive, like, you're doing the Hoop Hall, the Hoop Hall Classic there that it's the top high schoolers around the country. Like, Tom skips a Celtics game to go do that.
Yeah.
You know,
I think Tom would quit if it meant he couldn't work a hoop hall.
That's
his top priority.
It absolutely, 100% is. So you and Tom for sure are tracking these guys. I normally, under normal circumstances, will kind of loosely listen to the conversation, and then March rolls around and I'll start paying attention to March Madness. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I see what they're saying, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, you have these conversations. Anyway, that digression goes on. So Okongwu, obviously we don't know what he's going to be in the NBA, but he's one of your favorites. Maybe he is your favorite. I know he's Tom's favorite. What makes it so appealing if he slips down past five and becomes a realistic option for the Celtics to trade up? What is so appealing about going for him? Chris and I come back to wrap up the podcast right after this from Built Bar. I've been talking about Built Bar. It's the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. I love it. I pop it into my gym bag and have one after every workout because it's high protein, low calorie, low sugar, high fiber. It's great. If you're on a keto diet, fine. If you've got a nut allergy, no problem. They've got flavors without nuts. My favorite is peanut butter. I get my 19 grams of protein with just 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 net carbs. Very cool thing that's happening right now on Built Bar as well, a limited release strawberry flavor and 12% off your order through October 12th because Built Bar has partnered with Barbells for Boobs, Breast Cancer Angels, Huntsman Cancer Institute, and Living Beyond Breast Cancer. This Breast Cancer Awareness Month, they're trying to raise $50,000. So with that 12% off, you're going to help raise up to $50,000 to support those great breast cancer charities. Also, on top of everything, they have a very cool pink sweatshirt, a hoodie that's just $19.95, and 100% of those profits go to the charities. So go to builtbar.com, check it out, check out their new strawberry flavor, support these great breast cancer charities, and a portion of these proceeds, 100% of the proceeds from the hoodie, are going to go to support these great organizations, and you get 12% off every order through October 12th. Plus, if you use the promo code Locked On, you're going to get $10 off your next order. So use the promo code Locked On, $10 off at Built Bar, and support these great charities for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
I love his defensive upside. I'll be clear first. I would say that if, in terms of guys who are sliding, hypothetically, he would probably be my second favorite option. I think Killian Hayes would probably be my top option for the Celtics, but they're neck and neck. They're right there. Okongwu's defensive upside is huge. James Wiseman seems to be the expert pick to be. He'll probably go before Okongwu.
He's the other
top big man in this class. I like Onyeka's defensive upside more than Wiseman. He's got really good footwork. He's a good interior passer. He's good in the pick and roll. Like, he's a good finisher. I could go all day. He's a great shot blocker. I think a lot of it comes down to the Celtics' never-ending search for their big man. You know,
sure.
I feel like that's a conversation that we're always having. And I think that really creates a lot of the appeal when it comes to Onyeka and the Celtics. I think anyone realistically would be lucky to get him. I want my Washington Wizards to grab him, but knowing the Wizards, they will screw up somehow and they won't take him. They'll take a draft and stash late in the lottery. But I think he's an appealing front court option. I think any front court improvement right now would be intriguing despite having Robert Williams. I think even if that means parting with someone like Vincent Poirier or something like that, eliminating a younger option in there, I think that's a no-brainer. And so I just think he's a good lateral mover. I mean, he's a good shot blocker. He's disciplined. I think he's the most appealing front court option for the Celtics. And that's why a lot of people have just kind of attached themselves to him as an option for Boston to trade up and grab.
So you mentioned Killian Hayes. What makes him so appealing?
Yeah. Killian, I mean, the Celtics need guard help off the bench. I could see Brad Wanamaker probably there's a good chance he's not with the Celtics next year.
Yeah, sure.
And so if you're looking for that guard option, if you're looking where the Celtics are right now, a guy like Tyrese Maxey is great. But Killian Hayes is someone who, he's a good shooter. He's really, really good pick and roll ball handler. He's just a tremendous playmaker. He's 18 years old. He's young as hell. He's a little bit raw, but I think he would be an ideal option to have as a guard to kind of work as a project, but also use in year one. He could be pretty effective off the bat. And I think if you're looking to bolster that backcourt depth, which I think the Celtics need to do, you know, as we all saw down the stretch, they need some backcourt scoring to help off the bench. I think that he would be a great guy. I don't have my notes up right now, but I think he's a pretty good catch and shoot guy. And I just think he would provide that backcourt scoring, and yep, he's a great playmaker, and he could be that bench ball handler that could really be useful.
Yeah. So that'd be interesting, because I don't think you give up on Robert Williams if he's the guy that you're trading up for. You might have to attach. I mean, who do you attach in that case? Maybe
you have to be pretty certain that you're getting an addition to the front court if you're parting ways with Robert Williams.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I mean, unless they just have no faith in him improving.
That would make me sad. That would make me sad.
I just recorded an episode of Geno Time with Tom and Nicole, mm-hmm, and what I said there, I think, is universally true, that everybody really, really wants Robert Williams to succeed.
Yeah.
But we're getting to a point now where it's like, you got to show it. You got to show it. And it's unfair. It is unfair. I'm doing a mailbag on the Friday show where there has been a question about Robert Williams. So I don't want to eat into that. But
yeah,
it has been unfair for him. The injuries have really sapped the reps that he's needed. And I think he's just the type of guy that, with the reps and the constant kind of reinforcement, the positive reinforcement, that type of stuff has been very, very helpful. The more he's played, the better he's gotten. But they couldn't play him in the playoffs because you're trying to win a playoff game. Like, you don't have time to be like, yes, that was good. Now go out there and screw up three more times so we can show you on film that it was bad. But how much faith do they have? If you're trading up for a big, I mean, maybe it's not him. Maybe you give up on Grant Williams and you say, hey, you've got Robert as a starter, and maybe Okongwu is going to be the backup. And by the time you have to make a decision on Rob, maybe Okongwu has kind of stepped up, or maybe he surpasses him and Rob just goes back to the bench. You know that you got one more year of Tice, so you're good there, but you don't have to go beyond that year of Tice. I don't know what their options really are there. But there are ways they can go. I'm not saying that if Okongwu is available and you want to trade, you have to give up Rob. I just feel like you have to give up a big to make that move. And it's certainly not going to be Tice, because the Celtics are in a championship window and they trust him. But they also have another window that's kind of opening up behind the championship window, which is, what happens when Jason Tatum is at the end of his extension or nearing the end of his extension, and we have to figure out what this team is going to be post Kemba, post Hayward, however that works out, maybe even post Smart. So a guy like Okongwu, if he's going to be your Bam Adebayo type, then you better find that kind of now and develop him into that kind of player.
I totally agree. And I think there is an option for the Celtics to maybe add a front court piece while still keeping Rob.
Yep.
If they were to stick around with one of those late first rounders and go after a guy like Xavier Tillman, if he sticks around, I mean, I love Xavier Tillman's game. He's a quality, really smart player he had a good meeting with the Celtics from what I heard. And I think that the Celtics would make great use of his basketball IQ, great use of his defense. He's, again, not the biggest center, but he's strong as hell, and he makes up for his lack of height. And so that's an option where maybe they could add him to the back end of the front court rotation with one of those late first rounders while still giving Rob a little extra time to continue developing and see. So there is some flexibility there. Yeah. Well,
why don't we take this opportunity here to look at what if they don't make a trade?
Right.
Like let's assume. So we've talked about the, okay, trade up options. There's always a trade out option, which it's not even worth discussion. If the Celtics do find someone that they can trade out of this draft and maybe flip that into a late first rounder next year, great. I think, I lied. We will discuss it, but just briefly. Is 14 and 26 worth trading into like whatever that is next year? Like somewhere in that 15 or 60, whatever, in that similar spot in next year's draft. Is it just worth going into that and finding a better player?
I mean, I love next year's draft, and that would give me an opportunity to really dive into next year's class. So bias, maybe, yeah. But I don't know, because I do think there are good players in this first round. So I don't know if that would be the best option if you have that opportunity to get help right now.
Yeah.
But maybe the Celtics have a couple guys that they really like in next year's class already, because you know they're well aware of who's there. And so sure, maybe that is the case. But next year's class is certainly better than this year. So you have to think that could be a possibility.
Sure. Okay. So that's the trade-out discussion. Thank you. All right. So now let's look at, assuming that it doesn't matter who they pick in the second round, because that's probably going to be a two-way player. Let's just pretend that that's the case. Let's not even worry about the 30th overall pick right now, because we're presumably attaching that to somebody who's going to sign Enes Kanter or trade for Enes Kanter. Let's just pretend that 30 is just, they're using it as a way to get off a contract. 14 and 26. Who are, let's start with 14, obviously. Who are the realistic options that you think will be available that can help the Celtics? Assuming that, look, the Celtics aren't developing somebody. They kind of need some help right away.
I would be lying if I said that Sadiq Bey wasn't on my mind. He has been like my guy in this draft class, and I think he will be available at that pick. He'd be able to space the floor. He'd provide shooting. He's a good defender. He's a reliable role player, and he's going to be a reliable role player. He's the classic Villanova player who comes into the league, who kind of like Mikal Bridges type deal. He's ready to go, and he knows his role, and he's coming out of a good system. He'd be a trustworthy guy to select there who could help right away. There's a number of options, though, and directions you could really go. If you're looking at Sadiq Bey, it's toward the 3-and-D mold, and, you know, ideally, someone like Devin Vassell could drop to you there, and he's like the best floor spacing shooter that you could get in that spot. If you want a guard, like we were talking about before, a guy like Tyrese Maxey, there's a good chance he's there at 14. I think he would be a great option for the Celtics. So it really depends on which way they look to go. Shooting-wise, I think a guy like Sadiq Bey, maybe Aaron Naismith, I don't think Devin Vassell is going to be available there. So I think Sadiq Bey and Naismith are probably the best options at that point. If you're looking for that backcourt scoring, Tyrese Maxey could be there. He could also be that, you know, backcourt ball handler off the bench that you need. A guy like Cole Anthony, there's a chance that he drops. I have no idea what teams think of him right now, because he just had a terrible, just a crappy year at UNC with a bad team. So he could be another guard option. It really depends on what they're looking for. Again, like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, there's such a wide range with everyone in this draft. Like Cole Anthony, for all we know, could go at 7, but he could also go at 22. Like,
yeah.
it's really completely
it's
up
crazy.
Yeah.
So I did see Tyrese Maxey play. I took a trip down to Lexington.
That's right.
Down in the February-ish, or maybe it was December, December-ish. The Celtics had a big, like, weird extended time off earlier in the season, and I have some friends who live down there, so I drank a lot of bourbon, which those who know me, it's not surprising.
Yeah.
But obviously Kentucky is the place to go for the bourbon, like, fresh out of the barrel. But I saw Tyrese Maxey play, and I hated him. Just really? One game. He played one game. I thought he was terrible.
Is that the bourbon talking? Or
well, that's why I prefaced it with the bourbon, because I was like, did I not see something? It was I forget what game it was, but God, Kentucky looked terrible. I was like, this is a good team? Maxie's supposed to be a guy. Like, it might have been seriously his worst game of the season. And obviously I'm not going to judge off of one game, but I just think it's funny that we're talking about possibly getting Tyrese Maxey. Here's Tyrese Maxey, who could be a Boston Celtic at the 14th pick. And I'm like, oh, I saw you once. You sucked.
Him down.
You were the worst basketball player.
He doesn't totally pop like a lot of other guards in this class. He's not, you know, he's not crazy athletic, but that can sometimes limit him off the dribble a little bit, especially if, say, Kentucky's having a rough outing. That athleticism can limit him. But he's got a really good feel for the game. He works his butt off. He's got a good motor, and he's good on the defensive end. And I think if the Celtics are looking for a young guard to kind of add in, he could be there on the board. So he's kind of has to be in the conversation.
Sure, yeah.
A little bit. And I like his feel for the game, and I like his motor. I think Celtics fans would honestly like him a lot. He's got good upside. I mean, I'm not terribly high on him like a lot of these other guards in the draft per se, but I think his feel for the game and his size are appealing, among other things.
I feel like this draft, I mean, I know there's already a draft lottery, but like, it is like the lottery balls are all like bouncing around in that vacuum thing. And not until you pull one up do you know, okay, oh, so that came up? Okay, so now this other one's still in there. So there's a possibility. So if you're holding like the number 14 and it hasn't come up, you're like, oh, okay, there's still a chance that this 14 could come up. So I'm asking you for specific names because people ask me for specific names.
Right.
And it literally sounds, it could be like kind of anybody. And I'm looking at these mock drafts, and the mock drafts have guys kind of all over the place.
It's all over the place. Yeah, you know, it's completely all over the place. Like I said, like Maxey's a similar guy like Cole Anthony. Like, someone could take a shot at him in the late, you know, in the back end of the top 10. Someone could end up with him in the early 20s. Like, I don't think that'll be the case. I think he'll go early teens, honestly, early to mid teens, if I had to guess. But again, the range with some of these guys is just kind of all over the place. So it is tough to pin down when you're looking at targets. That's why I always come back to Sadiq Bey. He's old, reliable. I think he'll be there. And I need the Celtics to grab him. I'm a little biased. I watched him a lot at Villanova. But guys like him, Devin Vassell, Aaron Naismith, who are these guys who would really space the floor well off the bench for the Celtics. They're smart players. They're reliable on both ends. I think that's a sturdy pick if the Celtics were to stick around 14.
Sure. So I'm looking at one mock draft that had the lowest I've seen Maxey is at 24. The highest I've seen him is at 15. It's a pretty wide range, but
yeah, yeah,
it is in that range that you're talking about. So he's kind of, he is there, and really just comes down to like, all right, one thing that stood out to me with Danny Ainge is he admitted that in this draft, basically, usually you kind of draft best player available.
Yeah.
But he did say that in this draft, you might be searching for more need-based players, which is kind of an admission that we don't have a lot of ways to improve our team unless they do something crazy and trade one of their big players. You know, we've been talking a ton about Gordon Hayward opting in and then getting traded, or if they decided they want to package some other package to go for a star. I mean, maybe, but more realistically, it's going to be tinkering around the edges and adding these guys through the draft. So if Danny Ainge is admitting, yeah, we might need to go for more need-based drafting, then that's what we're talking about here. Shoring up their bigs, if you want to trade up for a Kungwu, do you want to go with more wing help? And do you stay put for that wing help? Where do you value, you know, the trading up versus the staying put, all of that stuff. It's so all over the place right now that it's so hard to lock in on a particular player.
Right.
And we don't have the draft workouts to hint at what the Celtics might be thinking, because we don't know if they're going into a draft workout for Anthony Edwards, and you're like, oh, wow, they might have plans. You know, if it leaks out that they're in one of his workouts, then you start going crazy about who are they going to trade up? Who are they going to get rid of? What are they, blah, blah, blah. So we're kind of flying blind.
We're kind of flying blind. I totally agree. I mean, in terms of Danny talking about drafting from a need-based perspective, it kind of came back to where earlier on in draft season, when we thought the draft was going to be way earlier, Tom and I kept kind of, you know, when I would go on Geno Time or just be talking with him, we kept coming back to those shooting floor spacers off the bench because the Celtics could use that shooting off the bench. And so that's kind of why we grouped together that Sadiq Bey, Aaron Naismith, Devin Vassell kind of group. That would definitely be one. But again, then you go to the guards if they look for the backcourt help. You go to a guy like Tyrese Maxey, maybe Cole Anthony if he's available because he'd provide a scoring punch immediately off the bench. So you're right. You're kind of flying blind. You know what the team needs, but you don't know really the real range that teams view these players in, and you don't really know the possibility of where they're going to end up if they end up trading or whatever. It's kind of all over the place.
It really is. It really is all over the place. All right, well, so wrapping it up at a spot where we admit we don't know what the hell we're talking about. Yeah, or
I was going to say, we'll finish the whole conversation with, well, we don't really know. It could
I don't
be
know.
Anywhere, but don't listen to anything I said.
40 minutes of podcasting to come to, I don't know. Yeah. Your guess is as good as mine. Thanks.
That's really all draft evaluation is, realistically. It's just a shoulder shrug, maybe.
I mean, if it was an exact science and people knew ahead of time, then Giannis Antetokounmpo wouldn't have gone, what, 13th or whatever he went?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like,
right.
I mean, right. You don't know.
Sadiq Bey would be the number one pick. So that's
there you go. Yeah, you really don't know. And especially in a draft like this where so much equal talent and there's no standout guy.
Totally.
Somebody's going to screw something up at the top. Somebody's going to throw a curveball, and then all hell is going to break loose. So we'll see. Hey, thanks for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. I'm sure I'll have you back on to talk about things that, I don't know, whatever.
More we'll shoulder see. Shrugs. I'll be back for more
shrugs. Yeah, Lockdown Shrugging Podcast. Thanks, Chris. Chris is great. Follow him on Twitter, at Chris Grenham. That's Grenham, at Chris Grenham. He's great. He's a cool dude. He'll answer all of your draft questions. This is a great year to have somebody like him and Tom around because this is a crazy draft. And as you just heard, we don't know what the hell is going to happen. But we'll be tracking it. We'll be talking about it some more. Again, tomorrow's the mailbag. So email me, jcorrales@masslive.com. Your question will be answered either on masslive.com or in tomorrow's podcast. So go ahead and email me. If you're a new listener and you're still here, that means hopefully you've enjoyed the show. And I encourage you to subscribe wherever podcasts exist, even follow on Spotify. Seriously, anywhere you find a podcast, you'll find the Locked On Celtics podcast. It's the number one Locked On. It's the number one Celtics podcast. It's not the number one Locked On podcast, but it's the number one Celtics podcast in the world. So thanks to all of you subscribers for rating 5 stars and writing good reviews, because that's what makes that happen. Also, thank you for sharing the podcast. When somebody asks you what they should be listening to, tell them the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.